south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander...
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
All right, for all you coffee drinkers out there, here's an interesting take. Coming from Kevin, New York City, says, Johnny, you sometimes talk about all the great coffee varieties coming out of Central and South America, mostly Guatemala, El Salvador, Colombia, Brazil, and just a few others. Those are the Latin American countries that produce premium coffees we hear about up in the States. Well, I agree. Most of that stuff that makes it to the U.S. is top shelf. I should know because I was a barista at Starbucks in college. As much as Americans and other first world people love Starbucks and the equivalent Starbucks copies in the first world, there are some negative secondary effects that have changed our whole society for the worst. There are some worldwide negative effects that have been caused strictly by the presence of Starbucks. Yes, of course, there are big positives too, but no one ever seems to mention the negatives, so I will. Believe me, Johnny, I learned a lot at Starbucks. Before I worked there, I'd only experienced percolator coffee like Hills Brothers in my own little middle-class house, and all the dads, moms, kids, and housewives in my neighborhood drank the same stuff. We had no idea any other kind of coffee existed. All we knew that it was in everyone's house. Mom and dad drank it. It was cheap. And so we did too. By the way, I'm in my mid-40s. So before I worked at Starbucks, that was the only kind of coffee I ever tasted besides the stuff in machines and cafeterias everywhere. When I was a kid, there were only three kinds of coffee. Cafeteria machine coffee, where the cup drops, you watch the liquid drop into it, and you just know it's coming from some kind of instant freeze-dried mix. Then there was the coffee at home, usually Folgers or Hills Brother. And the worst coffee of all, instant coffee like Nescafe. So all my life, till I came to Starbucks, I didn't even know coffee came in beans and you could grind your own. That's how middle class or lower middle class my family was. Though I remember big bins of coffee beans in grocery stores, but I never thought to have them ground there for me. I just bought the stuff my ma bought. In fact, I remember living at Ma's house and opening a can of Folgers or Butternut or whatever it was. There was a little metal key on the top of the can, and you'd pop it, and the air would suck out of it. It smelled super fresh, to me anyway. Though it could have been packed 25 years ago, for all I knew. Anyway, after working at Starbucks for a while, I noticed a couple of things. I noticed, first of all, the more sugar and junk people add to their coffee, the more out of shape physically the customer would be. Now, that seems obvious, I know. Just bear with me here for a minute. Here's some more generalizations. I find black coffee drinkers, and I'm one myself, seem to take themselves seriously. I remember back in college at the cafeteria where everybody pounded down the coffee in the no-dos. People would even comment about the oddball that drank black coffee. Very few people did. Because pure black coffee from the machine was such rot gut. Almost everyone would load their coffee down with sugar and artificial creamer. Till the coffee in the cup eventually looked like bilge water. The fact is, when people drink straight black coffee, even at Starbucks, you do get noticed. Eyes roll. Some will even say things like, oh, so you're hardcore. You drink high octane, huh? And it appears that some black coffee drinkers are seriously impressed with themselves for just drinking it black. It does take a certain kind of person. That said, there are many, many pretentious coffee drinkers that do the Starbucks thing regularly. What I mean is they're picky, but they don't impress me. Though I found what they drink says a lot about their personality. And you know, Johnny, in a past show, you were talking about how when you sit and people watch, that became a game for me and some of my friends working at Starbucks, too. You make a kind of personality judgment just by the way they look and walk. And their coffee selection. Yes, to pass the time, we made a game out of it. We came to think that certain coffee selections are personality giveaways. We found cappuccino people were almost always Americans who think of themselves as worldly, or worldly wannabes, since most of them can't even spell it. And as for those people who ask for extra dry or light foam cappuccino or caramel macchiato or iced coffee with oat milk and stevia and all the dozens of permutations on soy and almond milk, well, those people strike me as picky world-class complainers who like to send food orders back to the kitchen at restaurants. Then he says, for sure, they are royal pains in the ass and the people they work with hate them. He says, I ought to know. I had a girlfriend like that. Make it two. Did you ever make the same mistake twice? All right, me Johnny here. You know, Kevin, that hits home for me too. And though I've never had a girlfriend like that, I've got two sisters exactly like that. You know, I don't see them much because they live up near Chicago. And I never go back, but I ship them down here once in a while. Like, for example, about a year and a half ago, we went to a stem cell clinic. And right across the street, there happened to be a Starbucks. And two, no, actually, all three of my sisters went there three times a day. Though one of them I know just went to Starbucks for the ride, just to hang out with the group. It's the other two that had that same habit up in the States. Starbucks two or three times a day, like clockwork. And me, just sitting there watching the whole thing go down, I did the numbers. Let's say you're living up in the States, you go to Starbucks two or three times a day, dropping, let's say, daily, $10. And that's if you're drinking regular coffee, which is $3 or $4 a cup. If it's cold foam frappuccino or venti cafe americano or some other such ludicrous concoction, you'll drop $5 or $6 a hit. Let's just say for people like my sisters, $10 a day. That's over $3,000 a year down that cake hole. Now, of course, the average person doesn't frequent Starbucks two or three times a day, I don't think. But if you like Starbucks, they say on certain internet sites and stuff that people spend an average of $20 to $30 a week there, which still works out for Starbucks aficionados to over $1,000 a year. Not to mention all those coffee cakes and mushy, sugary goodies people always snack on to go with the mocha java. Not a very healthy habit, though Starbucks marketers will make it seem so, with talk of the healthy green benefits of organic soy, almond milk, stevia, etc. Though they fail to mention the massive calorie overload. Then Kevin goes on to say, in my opinion, Starbucks has somehow brainwashed the middle class masses into thinking that when they're sitting around grooving on Anja and all the new age background music, they're suddenly elevated to upper middle class or even VIPs. All for the price of a $6 frappuccino they can't even spell. Then he says, Johnny, I can't help thinking that some of the best coffee I ever had was truck stop coffee at Stuckey's at 75 cents a cup. And if you spend $1, you get free refills. Makes you wonder, how do they do it? How do certain truck stops pull it off? All right, me Johnny here with my 2 cents. You know what? That's a great idea. Imagine if Starbucks had a new item on the menu, genuine truck stop coffee, served in those big, thick porcelain diner cups. But the recipe, that's the key. How do you get it? You'll need one of those big old commercial bun coffee percolators and never ever clean it. That's probably the key. Then he says, Johnny, I know Starbucks has expanded throughout the world and throughout Latin America too. And Johnny, you said that it appears just Latino high rollers who like to show off their wealth go to and hang out at Starbucks, even if the coffee's better and cheaper right across the street. The thing is, Johnny, I've been to Mexico a couple times, and I've been to a Starbucks in Guadalajara, which is mostly a university town, not a tourist trap. I noticed something that seemed a bit strange, though I think you mentioned it in a past show a long time ago. It seems all the customers who were Mexicans, and everyone around was speaking Spanish, so I assumed they were all Mexicans. Yet they were very white, tall, and stylish. It's easy to see the Mexican upper classes are noticeably whiter and taller than the Mexicans you commonly see on the street. And the ones that were sitting there just hanging out had iPhones, laptops, and iPads. Most definitely a wealthy crowd. I know it was only a sample of one, but it made me conclude that Starbucks, at least in Guadalajara, is a haven for white, upper-class Latinos with North American, first-world gringo habits. Most all of them look to be in their mid-20s to somewhere in their 40s, too. Oh, and I should also mention there were maybe 25 customers in there, only two or three were identifiably gringo. The rest of them, pure, upscale, white, tall, well-manicured Latinos and Latinas. Lots of bottle blondes, who quite obviously spent lots of time and money on clothes, bling, watches, trinkets, and hairdos. Meanwhile, about 4 or 5 blocks away in a less organized, even chaotic business district, he says, I stopped into a local fried chicken place. I saw almost no upscale white people, but lots and lots of tattoos. Not saying they were gangbangers or narcos, they were just regular people. Quite a different scene from the Starbucks crowd. For one thing, at Starbucks, it was quite obvious there were many fewer tattoos, more tastefully done, too. Oh, and by the way, a cup of black coffee at that chicken licking place, coming out of one of those big cafeteria-style percolators, about 75 cents. Just like truck stop coffee, only not that good. Oh, and they have Coffee Mate, too. Remember that artificial milk-like powder? haven't seen that stuff for a dozen or so years either. The downside of that little chicken restaurant, however, was that when I left, my friends back at the hotel told me I smelled like I'd taken a bath in a deep fryer. They were right. The place, even the air, was saturated with grease. All right, that's where Kevin's email ends. That was Kevin from New York. By the way, Kevin, though personally, after eating at one of those Latin American chicken licking joints, I'd be more worried about what that grease did to my stomach than my hair. I can't eat at those places myself. My stomach won't take it. I get a kind of a greasy afterburn. Remember, down here in Latin America, that's all they seem to use. That toxic, disgusting palm oil. Obviously, because it's cheap. Truth is, all restaurants seem to use it, high class and all, unless it says right on the menu, we use olive oil. And you will occasionally see that if you go to a natural or health food restaurant or an Italian restaurant. Don't ever assume they're using healthy oils like olive oil or coconut, unless they actually spell it out, because those two oils are so much more expensive than palm oil. The place will definitely use it as a marketing tool and let you know about it. By the way, if you happen to be a tea drinker, no problem, no hay problema. Though you rarely see Latin Americans drinking tea, you just don't. This is the land of coffee, you know. Nevertheless, all restaurants have varieties of tea available, and all the supermarkets have all kinds of varieties of tea, too. Even oddball healthy ones, like tea laced with curcumin. Now, I know I mentioned this a long, long time ago, but even with the hundreds, if not thousands, of boutique coffee plantations, especially in the Altiplano regions of Guatemala, you'll find almost all of it is exported, bought up by big boutique coffee chains like Starbucks and all of their copycats. In fact, when I first got down here to Latin America many years ago, I just couldn't believe how hard it was to buy premium coffee. Even though there was a boutique coffee plantation right outside my door, I could see the plants with the red coffee beans on them right outside my window. I thought, how could that be? You know, water, water everywhere, but not a drop to drink? Sort of like that. But I just couldn't buy this stuff. I couldn't find it. Until finally, an expat friend of mine who taught at one of those helicopter schools told me he had the same problem. He liked to buy the beans, grind his own, and run it through an espresso machine. He said, how about I take you to a boutique coffee plantation up by Lake Atitlan? A plantation owned by a Swiss guy who always has extra after he's exported his main crop to, I think it was, some high-end coffee shops in Germany. So we took off on a 3.5-hour drive out of Guatemala City, went up to Lake Atitlan, took a little boat taxi around the lake, and ended up at that guy's plantation. By the way, there are at least 25, probably 50, little boutique plantations around the lake. You get off the boat at any one of those 12 little towns, and as you're walking to the restaurant, tienda, or mom-and-pop hotel, you'll see little coffee bushes everywhere. They're growing along the side of the road in people's backyards, everywhere. And you know, some of these little plantations are so small, they probably only produce maybe 10 or 20 100-pound sacks of coffee a year. Those sacks of coffee beans are called quintales. They don't grind the stuff. They export it to the States and Europe, Japan, Canada, Australia, etc. They ship the beans. When I first landed, back then, they didn't have the little kiosks or coffee stands like they do now. Nowadays, if you take that trip around the lake, every 5 or 6 blocks, there'll be a little kiosk selling coffee from the nearest plantation. So most plantations have a little stand out in front, usually a tiny shed, very similar to the kinds you see out in the farmlands of the Midwest, you know, selling melons, strawberries, corn on the cob in season. There'll be an old lady or kid hanging around selling this stuff. Well, that's how it is up in Lake Atitlan when it comes to coffee. By the way, it's a very cool way to visit the place. Take the boat, it docks at the pier at one of those little towns. You get off, walk down the main street. Some of those little towns just have gravel walkways. Stop off at one of those little coffee kiosks, and man, does it smell good. The whole area smells like coffee. They'll take the beans, grind them up for you right there, run it through an espresso machine if you like. Yep, believe it or not, in the last 5 or 10 years, modernity has hit Lake Atitlan. Most of those little wooden one-man kiosks now have a little espresso machine. By the way, it's mostly Europeans who will drink the espresso. Americans and other tourists, even locals who stop by for a coffee, will order a black coffee called a cafe americano when it's run through the espresso machine. That means basically just a cup of hot water with a shot of espresso in it. Just a diluted espresso, not strong like an espresso, but lots and lots better than percolated black coffee. So it's a regular cup of coffee with that telltale small layer of espresso foam on top of it. That's the best way and how I like it. So why am I doing this coffee rant? Just to let you know that Starbucks and the internationalization of boutique coffee chains like Starbucks, the clones. They've changed the whole nature of the coffee business and coffee plantations. It's a good thing, too, because now there's a certain amount of coffee tourism going on in especially Central America. Gringos and Europeans come, they have coffee plantation tours. Some plantations even have their own boutique hotels. And, for example, if you're in Guatemala City, you don't have to travel 3.5 hours anymore to get boutique coffee beans. You can get them at any of the dozens and dozens of little kiosks everywhere, or the local grocery store, too. Especially the larger grocery stores, they'll handle quite a few little local boutique brands. And if you're off the gringo tourist trail, man, is that boutique coffee cheap. I just bought a pound of boutique beans the other day. Set me back around $6.50. Whereas on the tourist trail, it'd be double that. In the States, triple. Though one complaint, over the years, there has been a kind of sizing down of packaging. So here in Latin America, especially with the really good small plantation boutique coffees, you'll get a nice hermetically sealed package, but it won't be a full pound. It'll be 400 grams. You know, 454 grams is a pound, so they'll short you 54 grams. But they'll be honest about it. Although people say, get me a pound of coffee, it won't be a pound. It'll be 454 grams. It'll say so in the small print right on the wrapper. They won't come right out and BS you. In the earlier days, I'd say 10 or 15 years back, everything came in a one-pound package, a real one-pound package of 454 grams. So, even before the COVIDiot thing, when inflation really took off during the lockdowns, those one-pound packages of coffee here in Latin America had already been sized down to 400 grams, just like everyone seems to be doing up in the States, if you've noticed the packaging in the grocery stores up there. Not only are they downsizing packaging whenever they can get away with it, they're charging more for it. So, we're all getting hit with a double whammy. And you know, the egg prices up in the States would not have shot up so drastically had the farmers been able to convince the chickens to downsize the product. But chickens are stubborn and would have none of it. The result? They jacked the price up double, even triple. Though, you might be glad to know here in Latin America, that didn't happen with eggs. Sure, inflation has hit hard down here in Latin America like it hit you up in the first world. But unlike up in the States, certain consumable products like eggs have not been jacked up out of the ordinary. Sure, inflation has hit, but basically, everything's kind of increased at a standard basic rate. Though, oddly enough, when I'm in the grocery store, I don't see the boxes or packaging getting smaller. No sneaky downsizing yet. But it's coming. I wonder what the lag time's going to be on that phenomenon. Meanwhile, we have this email from Keith, also from New York. New York State, he says. He doesn't say which city. He says, Johnny, I'm getting out of Dodge by next year. It's a promise. My family knows it. My wife doesn't like it, but she's coming along anyway. The straw that broke the camel's back for me? Johnny, I have a business with 60 employees. That's 60 employees. I was notified early this year that a prospective employer with more than 50 employees can no longer ask a prospective employee to explain the work experience gaps in his resume. In other words, Johnny, a prospective employee you interview does not have to tell you about those times in rehab, those times in the slammer for DUIs, theft, or any criminal record whatsoever. Yes, how the world has changed. I'm not liking this new world much, he says. This world where no one takes or accepts responsibility anymore. Funny how you no longer have to put down anything on your resume or form that casts an unfavorable light on your future performance as an employee. Kind of reminds me how schools have dropped SAT tests, how law schools are dropping the LSAT, med schools, the MCAT, how schools are dropping the A through F format for pass-fail, how grade schools and high schools are allowing people to be socially promoted even if they can't read. Universities are even eliminating student rankings. Johnny, not so long ago I dug through some old boxes in the attic and found my high school and college transcripts. Naturally, I checked out my college senior year transcript. There was a little column to the left that said ranking. I ranked 18 in a class of 130. Wouldn't that kind of info be very important for a prospective employer to know? What if I was number 130 or 129 out of a class of 130? Or in the top 5? Well, it turns out employers cannot find out that stuff anymore because it smacks of racism. So call me a bigot, call me a racist, call me a white supremacist. Call me anything you like, but don't forget to call me an expat, because I'm out of here. All right, Keith, thanks for that. Maybe I'll run into you sometime. It's interesting about the resume and what you don't have to say, but You know, in the old days when you had to sort of reveal everything and you had a hole in your resume, I bet when the question was asked, what's this 2-year gap doing here? That would be the time to show your prospective employer how creative you are. I always thought saying you were building solar outhouses for Jesus in Haiti, that I think should cover any employment gap in the resume. Might even get you sympathy points. Speaking of Haiti, which is kind of a Latin American country, I mean, it's on the island of Hispaniola, attached to the Dominican Republic, which, by the way, has pretty much absolutely nothing in common with Haiti. It's been all over the news feeds that in Haiti, mobs have killed 13 gangsters with gas-soaked tires. And the day before, a mob in the Haitian capital beat and burned 3 gang members with gasoline-soaked tires on Monday after pulling the men from police custody at a traffic stop. Meanwhile, it says 6 more were burned in yet another neighborhood on Monday. Witnesses say they were gang members the police captured, then the residents took them away and set them on fire. Turns out, it says, a minibus was stopped and searched by police for contraband early Monday. They confiscated weapons from the gang members. Then the gang members were hauled out and lynched by members of the population. Then it says one eyewitness who gave his name as Edner Samuel told the Associated Press that members of the crowd then took the suspected gangsters away from the police, beat them and stoned them to death while putting gasoline-filled tires around their necks and lighting them. I just love stories with happy endings, don't you? Though one downside was there were no local politicians deep-fried that day. Maybe next time. Anyway, as I look at this story as it plays out in various social media platforms, I always look at the reader comments section. Guess whose name gets mentioned over and over again? President Bukele from El Salvador. Over and over again, the comments are saying, we need a Bukele. They need a Bukele. Where's our Bukele? Why are our politicians such weak pieces of garbage? Why don't our politicians have the balls of Bukele? And on and on and on. Bukele, Bukele, Bukele. Which leads us back to Ecuador again. You know, International Living's number one expat retirement destination. Of course, International Living and the retirement rags will never tell you that there's more than 100% increase in all crimes in Ecuador over the last year. That said, let me read parts of an article that just came out. April 22nd, 2023. The title? More neighborhoods in Ecuador are organizing vigilante groups to stop crime. They claim the government is absolutely non-responsive. Now, the body of the article starts by saying, the locals are frustrated and angry about rising crime. Residents of Ecuador neighborhoods continue to mount public protests, organizing their own anti-crime vigilante squads. It says, last Thursday and Friday night, residents of dozens of neighborhoods took to the streets, many carrying torches, sticks, and machetes. Groups of residents, for example, in southeastern Cuenca in the El Valle district, there were an estimated 5,000 people marching through the streets on just Friday night. Now, get this. It says, supporters claim they were stood up by Governor Mateus Abad. They say they were given a formal invitation by the government center to discuss concerns about crime. 5,000 civilians were there, but no one from the government showed up to talk to them, says Parish Councilman Diego Ramos. We waited for almost an hour, but the governor didn't even show us the courtesy by sending a substitute. The representative said the governor doesn't bother to show up for a meeting he promised to attend. What the hell's going on? Why is the biggest problem in the country, crime, being ignored? It says, because of the increase in crime, leaders of neighborhood groups have organized street patrols and set up phone and social media alert systems to warn of suspected thieves and extortionists, with signs being posted all around Cuenca and the rest of Ecuador, warning thieves and extortionists that they will be captured and tortured and burned. All right, me, Johnny, here. If you want, I'll send you a picture of what those posters look like. Yep, those citizen vigilantes are serious. They show a picture of a guy stealing something, and it says, Ladrón agarrado. That means, if we capture you, and then it says, Ladrón quemado. We will burn you. Then it says, Oliver Mejia, president of Virgin de Bronce neighborhood, says residents have established night patrols to go out and catch thieves who've targeted the area. They said, in fact, last night on Thursday, they caught a few of them and administered their punishment before the cops arrived, admitting that if the cops had arrived just a few minutes later, the punishment would have been terminal. Then the article goes on to say, Cuenca, Ecuador social media sites are posting videos and photos of suspected thieves and extortionists being beaten by crowds, with videos showing men on the sidewalk, blood streaming from their eyes and ears as police arrive to take them away. In that particular case, they've got a computer store owner claiming the men were stealing hard drives from his store. Meanwhile, police are warning neighborhood leaders against lynching, but admit it's a practice with a long history in Ecuador. I do so love a story with a happy ending, don't you? Oh, and by the way, once again, in the comments and discussion section, immediately after this article, guess whose name and methods keep popping up over and over again? El Salvador's President Bukele. Meanwhile, in a related article coming from English Language Rag, America's Quarterly, the title of the article, El Salvador's President Bukele's got a growing list of Latin America admirers. Let me just read a few bits here for you. It says, the Salvadorian president's gang crackdown has fueled allegations of human rights abuses and erosion of democratic freedoms, allegations made by first world do-gooders who've never set foot in the place. All right, I threw that last bit in. But seriously, then it says, the local populations and many officials in the region see it as a model to emulate. It says, and you won't hear this from a first world rag, within Latin America, Bukele's militarized crackdown on gangs is winning him a fan club that's huge and won't stop growing. Prominent local politicians and everyday people in countries from neighboring parts of Central America to far-flung South American countries like Peru and Chile have professed their admiration for his policies and expressed a deep desire to see their own countries adopt a similar approach. It says all throughout Latin America, citizens are holding pro-Bukele marches and cheering the Salvadorian president's visits to their countries. With Costa Rica, Colombia, Peru, Mexico, and Chile holding pro-Bukele street parades and demonstrations. Meanwhile, it says Bukele's Latin American critics are remarkably few and far between. Yet, he's depicted as a human rights-abusing pariah in the first world media. Big surprise, huh? Meanwhile, recent polls throughout Latin American countries show he's twice as popular as any other Latin American sitting president. If he was running for president in any other Latin American country, he'd beat all contenders. So next time you hear rotten things about Bukele in the first world press, just remember, there's another side to the story being told to you by those lying pukes at CNN, the New York Times, the BBC, you name it. If they'd actually send people down, get boots on the ground, and interview the common people on the street. However, they won't do it because it's not the story the wokesters and the libtards want you to hear. But you knew that already, right?
South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.